Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Simon Phipps joins me. We're going to be talking to David Gaddy and learn a lot about what open source communities are all about. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Simon Phipps, episode 386, recorded May 3rd, 2016. David Gaddy. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by IT Pro TV. IT Pro TV is an easy, entertaining approach to online IT training. For a free 7-day trial and 30% off the life of your account, go to itprotv/floss and use the code FLOSS30. And by DigitalOcean, simple and fast cloud hosting built for developers. Deploy an SSD cloud server in 55 seconds. Try it today for free. Visit DigitalOcean.com, and once you sign up, be sure to enter the promo code FLOSS in the billing section to get your $10 credit. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, libre, open-source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at Stonehenge.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, little projects, projects you may be using every day and not aware of it, projects you may want to go download right after the show, and sometimes unusual shows like that. You might find this one to be a little bit out of the normal ordinary. There we go. Use English, Randall. Use English. Joining me today is co-host Simon Phipps. Simon, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much, Randall. It's very good to see you back from Mexico. They let you out again. That's good.
Yes. The wonderful four-hour line for pedestrians at San Ysidro. I love that line.
Awesome.
I love it in the opposite way of the love. I mean that sort of ironically. Okay. So, yes. And unfortunately, I can't get to be in the super short line because I do not qualify for Sentry because I have a bit of a past. Anyway, so...
So I have that coming up. I've got the I'm off to San Francisco next week, and I'm looking forward to the exciting hour in the immigration lobby in San Francisco Airport.
So they haven't found out about your drug smuggling days? That's pretty nice.
Yeah, well, no, they just treat everybody who doesn't have an American passport as if they are a drug smuggler. So.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, that's redundant there. So I'm speaking to you back. I'm back in Silicon Rainforest. And it's actually slightly sunny outside. They had 80 yesterday, probably about 75 today. There's a people there that do that. No. And I normally set up in my bedroom, but of course the sun comes right through the blinds and makes all sorts of stripes on my face. So I'm back in the kitchen set where I just had this one big white thing, oops, behind me to worry about. So that's not too bad. Well, anyway, we could chit-chat all day, but that's not what this show is about. The show is about open source and the people who do it. Today's show is around a single person, David Gaddy, who we'll bring on in a couple of minutes. He seems to be rather diverse in the things he has done in open source and has some interesting things to say about creating community and about how to use Node.js the wrong way until you figure out how it works, and a couple of other things. It was really sort of broad reading through the kinds of things he was doing. And I saw him on Coding 101, and he was entertaining and interesting. So I believe we'll get a show similar to that today. Well, not the exact same words, because that would not make any sense. Just go watch Coding 101 and see if you find him out there. Simon, you got anything to say about that so far?
Nope. Going completely with your instincts on this one, Randall. I had a look at his website, and I don't even see open source mentioned. So that's my first question.
Oh, well, if you want to open the show with that, no, that'll be fine. No, I'll do my normal opening.
It's great. I'll let you do that one, Randall.
Yeah. But before we start that, we have to get a little bit of business done. So let's talk about people who take care of this show. Because a good IT pro is constantly learning and staying up to date with current technology certifications. IT Pro TV high-quality video tutorials will not only keep your IT skills current, but they'll bring you closer to achieving that new IT job you've been working towards. They've got 1,000 hours of content and more than 30 hours of new content added weekly. You can stream their courses live and on demand worldwide to your Chromecast, Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, or PC, plus learn on the go with your mobile device. The course topics include pfSense, Citrix Zen Server, CCNP Security, A+, AWS, Ethical Hacking, CompTIA Advanced Security Practitioner, and Microsoft Server 2016 MCSE, and more. 100-plus step-by-step virtual machine labs and Transcender practice exams. That's a $109 value. One low monthly subscription price, no-hassle cancellation policy. Transcripts let you follow from start to finish or jump right into any part of the video. And there's corporate and group pricing available. Clients have included Harvard, MIT, UCSD, Stanford, and more. So check out itprotv.com/floss and upgrade your brain with the most popular IT certifications. Premium subscriptions are only $57 a month or $570 a year, but we have a special offer. Try it free for 7 days when you sign up using our code FLOSS30 to check out their courses, live stream, and more. You'll also receive 30% off the lifetime of your account. That's less than $40 per month or $399 for the entire year. Just visit itpro.tv/floss, FLOSS, and use the code FLOSS30 and try it free for 7 days. Plus, save 30% off the life of your account. We appreciate IT Pro TV for their support of FLOSS. So let's go ahead and bring David on. David Gotti, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Yes, now you approached me, I think it was a couple months ago, about being on this show. And part of what I saw immediately was being a community manager for a particular project. I think it's Simply?
Yeah. It is.
Okay. And so, but that's not open source.
That's not open source. By the way, now I know who's the bad guy and who's the good guy in this talk.
Okay.
So I have to defend myself. The thing that I wanted to talk about is Node.js and what I discovered while working at Simply, because I also was developing the website. The product, and I discovered while developing that there is a cool feature about Node.js that nobody talks about, and the open sourceness, I guess that's the word. I write now my technical articles on GitHub, so they are open to everybody to change them, fix them, make them better, because I believe that, you know, you can't write the perfect article with all the perfect knowledge, because there is, you know, computer science is like super old and a lot of stuff happened. So I tried to do my best to write this article, explain this my finding, and my hope is like people will take advantage of not only Node.js but other languages.
Okay, well, let's go back a little bit in your history first. So you've had a long experience, a long history with open source. Can you talk about how you got involved and what kinds of projects you've worked on?
I started like as a PHP developer. So PHP is kind of open source, I guess. And I was just working on my internal project at the company when I was learning. I can think of it like, what did I do that is open source? All the SDK that we always released during different companies were like open source, of course. So at one company, we had like this product, this controller, and all the software for it was open source. And so I was also responsible for the documentation, so people knew like how to take advantage of it. Yeah, always like when there was something like hardware-related stuff, all the software for it was open.
Okay, and how long of a time span are we talking there?
That was like one company that I worked in 2013. And then the latest one was NV Drones, and we had the Arduino and JavaScript SDK like in 2014. But that company, I think, doesn't exist anymore.
So, David, where are you speaking to us from at the moment?
Right now I'm in Poland.
Right. And you seem to have got around a little bit, because in the bio you sent us, you said that you're from Italy and then you've lived in Bali and Sweden.
I was born in Sweden, raised in Italy, lived in Poland. Then I lived for a year in Bali. Then I came back to Poland. A little bit of traveling there.
Right. So how did you get on with your tech interests in Bali? It doesn't sound like a big tech destination.
Actually, that's a good question, because like Bali, it's very big on co-working spaces, and also companies go there like literally like to work for a year or two on a project. And since it's very cheap, you have beautiful like scenery with the ocean, surfing, and what have you. And actually, there's a lot of companies that made like a very cool product. There was one that did a game where you can interact with chemicals in the virtual world for schools. I don't remember the name anymore, but it was like featured by Unity 3D, the game engine company, on their main website. And yeah, I discovered that those guys were actually like pretty close to me. They had the office. And so, yeah, there's a lot of co-working places, and Bali is actually known for people like nomads to travel there, work remotely, and build something.
Yeah, everything I know about Bali, I learned on Eat Pray, watching Eat Pray Love. So,
that's true. What's happening there? So that's also that.
I'd imagine the internet was not ideal there. So, did you spend most of your time hacking, or were you spending most of your time on the beach?
So, actually, I was living next to the beach, but I didn't go for 3 months straight. And people were asking, like, oh, how's the beach? Like, I don't know. I have no idea. Because I was spending my time at the co-working space because the internet connection there is, like, very slow. So if you want, like, a good connection, you have to find a co-working space and just sit there and get 20 megabytes up and down. And there I was like working on my little projects, and especially you can check if you go to my website on Hackstereo. I also like a lot of playing with hardware and releasing, like, oh, that's a good point. There you go. That's the open source projects. On Hackstereo, I released 2 projects for IoT, like opening a garage door or measuring how much water flows through your faucet. And you get the source code, the schematics, the iOS app to log what's happening, the server in Node.js written. Well, no, actually, it was like Parse. I was using Parse.com until they closed it. And that's where I spent a little bit of time playing with hardware and having some fun.
Right. So was that where you started working on community activities?
Yeah, go ahead.
Carry on. No, carry on. Yeah, they'll edit that bit out.
Yeah, that was before. So once I got off the company that I was working at, I decided to go to Bali and stay there and regroup. And so there was like working as a developer relation manager, which I loved because it's pretty cool when you have to interact with developers and teach them about the company product, which I love to do. And one thing to keep doing that was actually to build, like, release this hardware projects and also, like, some software stuff. I released, like, an Android app that allows you to make photos, and, like, use the camera in the, like, RAW mode. But this is actually a very old project that I did while working as a Android developer. When Android was at 2.3 and you had only 16 megabytes of memory to write your app, and our app was actually heavy on taking multiple photos. And so I had to like build the camera app from scratch. And that's why I released that project on GitHub for other developers to use and learn how to actually build a camera like that. So actually, I like to teach a lot with open software, I guess.
So, did you have other people using those things? Because I had a look at your website, and you've written several articles about developer communities and community management. So, were there any community members involved in any of these projects, or did that come later?
No. So the community part is, although I always work at two companies. That was like just specific to the company. Like my other project, like the camera app, it's like every 2 weeks I get someone that will make a fork or use it. Now I just released this 2 article about Node.js and sockets because I decided that I would like to learn and share what I learned, how to use sockets with Particle and Node.js. So how to make socket in C, and how to use them in Node.js to like communicate. because I'm fascinated by IoT development. And so, you know, sending sensor data over the wire through a node server is pretty exciting to me. So I actually wrote a pretty big article about that.
Right. But let's zoom back in on community again, because the tech stuff is more Randall's party. You know, I'm very interested to understand you know, what you mean by community, because for some people, when they say community, are describing the users of a company's products, whereas other people who are talking about community mean a group of peers. And I wonder, when you talk about community in your articles, which of those are you talking about?
Interesting. I don't know how to answer this, because, like, in my case, the thing that I would like to is, like, for those articles to be more popular, and maybe people can start edit them and add, like, more knowledge something that I might missed. Since I just started doing that, I don't have a big follow up yet. But for example, my latest article about Node.js, like yesterday, a developer added like Python to the mix. And because at the end I asked if someone knows about another language that is stateful, then please add it. And so, you know, at least one. And my hope is like more people will start using that. And also I see like on Twitter, like people asked me to give like more examples, so in the future I add something else. So, you know, I'm trying to build a relation with developers right now.
Right. So,
Does that answer your questions?
Well, kind of. You know, I'm interested to know, you know, for you, what is the most important aspect of open source as it relates to community? You know, is it free licensing? Is it the way that communities are run? You know, what do you think is the most important aspect of community? Because this is a big deal for the Node.js community, who've just become part of Linux Foundation. So right. I think that's really where I'm going. I'm trying to understand your understanding of community and how it relates to open source and free software.
Then I guess I might be different, because, I mean, for me, a community is a group of people that are interested in a project and want to help and build it better and make it better. For example, with what I'm trying to do right now by using GitHub as a place to write articles is to help people understand different things that might be hard, or put it differently, like there is a lot of developers when they try to explain something, they make it super hard and difficult for newcomers to learn, and they will use for example big words to scare them off, right? And so my idea is like to bring people that think alike and are able to like express something more complicated in a more simpler way. So that's the thing that I'm trying to build.
Well, I want to get back to the Node.js thing, because I can certainly do that technical side of it much better than Simon. Go ahead.
No, finish.
Okay, great. Whether you're developing an app, a website, or working on a server-based project, you need flexible, reliable, and affordable hosting. DigitalOcean offers Droplets, which are virtual private servers that can be customized and deployed easily to host websites, web apps, production applications, personal projects, virtual desktops, and almost anything else you can think of with full root access. This helps you get your project off the ground quickly and make it easy to scale when you find success. DigitalOcean is used by over 600,000 developers, including me. I've had a DigitalOcean box running continuously now for about 15-16 months, so I'm definitely a player in the game here. Deploy and configure your Droplets with a streamlined control panel or simple API. You can choose your OS, Ubuntu, CentOS, Debian, Fedora, CoreOS, and the thing that attracted me to DigitalOcean is they have FreeBSD. Yes, FreeBSD in the cloud with one-click cloud deploys. Select one of the many pre-configured one-clicks like Drupal, Docker, or Node.js to get up and running quickly, or build the exact infrastructure you need with root access to servers running 100% SSDs in state-of-the-art data centers around the world. Highly scalable to meet the demands of a rapidly growing application or business. You can also use advanced features like floating IPs for high availability, private networking, and automated deployments via an API. They have an extremely active community with a large and detailed set of tutorials on all the ways you can use your Droplet. Want to configure a LAMP server, set up a virtual desktop or VPN? They got you covered. And it's so easy to get started. You can deploy an SSD cloud server in as little as 55 seconds. And I've watched that happen more than once. DigitalOcean has incredibly affordable and straightforward pricing. Servers start at only $5 per month. There's also hourly pricing available starting at less than a penny per hour. But we're going to make it so you can get started today and deploy an SSD cloud server for free. Visit DigitalOcean.com and create an account. Once you confirm your email and account information, go to the billing section and enter the promo code FLOSS for a free $10 credit. That's plenty to get started and explore what DigitalOcean can do. That's DigitalOcean.com. And once you sign up, enter the code FLOSS in the billing section to get your $10 credit for free. We thank DigitalOcean for being a longtime sponsor of Floss Weekly. And now let me go back to Node.js now. For some of our audience, Node.js is a mysterious thing. They've heard it. But they don't know what it is. Can you give us sort of the top-level view of what Node.js is and what it's trying to accomplish?
Right. So that was my point with the article that I wrote. Well, I should give enough context because when I started because like a friend was telling me that Node.js is great, it's the best thing on earth and what have you. So when I asked him, like, give me some valid points, everything was very broad, right? So the default thing that people tell you is like they have like a very big database of libraries, like with npm. It handles way more connection and faster than the average language, and so those points were never like the selling point because they didn't explain anything, right? So basically, Node.js is like it's the server itself, and they have built-in sockets which allow you to use libraries that will parse the data that goes through those sockets. So you can use the HTTP library, and so you can actually get the request parsed for you, and you can then make action based on the data that you're getting, right? So display the contact page, display the home page, this is a PostgreSQL request, this is a update request, what have you, right? And so the thing, like, when I talk with other people, they will ask me, like, okay, how do you put the server up? So Node.js is the server itself, right? And then JavaScript is just the language that they choose to use to write the code, right? Mm-hmm. And since they're using V8 to compile the code, you can also you should also stop to think about JavaScript as a scripting language because it's being compiled before it's been run. Right, and that's why it gives it this stateful nature of the environment where you have access to the RAM in the system itself.
Okay, so it's basically only used for web things?
So no, that's another confusing thing. You can write desktop apps for Mac and Windows and Linux. You can write mobile apps, iOS and Android. You can use it to write command line apps. So, yeah, but I guess like start with the web development first and then try to figure everything else out.
Okay, now what was the thing that you misunderstood and when you were developing, I think it's a Simply thing that we originally started talking about, what was the misunderstanding and how did it affect the way you wrote the code?
So since I started learning PHP and then I went to Android, and I realized the big difference here was obviously like PHP is scripting language, Java is compiled. But the advantage of Java was like I have access to the RAM, right? I have 16 megabytes. I can save something in memory. I can use it, reuse it, what have you, right? Cool. And this is like, and everybody will think like, well, this is how you develop like a Mac app, Windows app, iOS app, what have you. In the server world, I think a lot of people still think like how you developed sites 10 years ago, right? So it's a scripting language. So the code runs, you do the request, you load the page, and once that's done, your data basically is lost unless you're saving it in a database, right?
Right.
And so I was writing that app in a similar fashion. I have to use the database to save stuff. Otherwise, it's lost. And so by mistake, I find out that, you know, my arrays and my object are still in memory if I put them in the right place in the code. And I'm like, whoa, what's this stuff? So I started asking people, digging around, and nobody was able to give me an answer. And once I realized what this is, So now, for example, so if you go to the Simply website, for example, the template section and the price section, all the data comes from memory, not from the database. So when I load the app the first time, I do a query to the database, I load the data into an array, and then I display the data through that array. So I'm not touching the database anymore. I could literally like kill the database now and the site will still work because there is no more request to the database, right? And so another use case is like I'm also saving the, I'm just getting the telemetry data of all the servers to see like how many PDFs are being created, how many requests and all that, you know, just so I have an idea what's happening. And that data is saved in RAM, never touches the database because I don't care about storing that data. And so the impact on the server is very minimal. And that way I can actually don't have to touch the database at all in that case, right? So it's perfect for non-unique data. Of course, when someone logs in the system, I have to touch the database because the data is specific to that user, right? And for sure you can somehow do it, right? But that would be require a lot of work that I didn't want to. But this gives you like more options. So that's what I found.
So what kind of back-end database were you using?
So I'm using Postgres. Yes, yes. And so I wrote it in a way that there is an API. And so I have, if I do a request for a user, like show me his stats, I touch the database, right? If I'm displaying the templates, I touching the database only once when the site loads. And after that, all the data came from RAM. Even though I'm asking the API, the database API, I'm querying, right? But the API says, I have this data already, I don't have to touch the database anymore. And the same thing goes to for the telemetry data. There's an API that doesn't even have like the SQL object, nothing. It's just everything is saved in an array. And so I have three ways to storing and accessing data.
Okay, how does this scale? I mean, if you always have everything in RAM, then you're limited by RAM, right?
Well, yeah, but RAM is cheap and it's way faster than hard drive. So, for example, you could use, for example, a Redis database. That's what I was using before to store like non data that they didn't care about. They didn't care about. But then once I realized that I can use RAM, it's like, whoa, okay, I don't need this database because there is an overhead. I'm not using anyway all those features that does it have. So I could easily like get rid of it, right? Because in my case, Redis is awesome, but it has a lot of stuff that I don't care about. I'm not using. So that's that. And of course, you're limited by RAM, but nowadays you can get more memory for pretty cheap. And of course, the idea is not to store everything. I'm using the database, of course, to store it permanently. But then, for example, if I have templates, I have like 10 templates, so that's not a lot of memory used, right? All the telemetry data is like limited by how much places, are, how big is my array. So I can do the array like 1,000 entries or like 500 entries, right? You can split it up. So it all, of course, it all depends how much memory do you have. But I mean, you have it, so use it. That's what I want to say.
So you're talking about Redis. I'm not exactly. We were talking about Redis, right?
Oh yeah,
yeah. Have you looked at other ones like CouchDB?
No. Okay. But it's still a database, right?
So, well, there's a lot of them that have a much better interface to JavaScript objects because they're basically document stores. They're basically taking a JavaScript object and storing it in a way that can be scaled horizontally, and to get more performance, you throw more things at it. That sort of thing. I think there's like four or five things in that family, like Mongo, Couch. We've had them all on the show before, so I'm trying to remember back to all the different interviews.
I don't think that you have to.
Okay. All right. So you haven't looked at any of the document store databases
yet? Yeah, no, I mean, I understand them, of course. But the same way, since like I can store, so like even in Postgres, now Postgres have like the latest version have like a JSON object that you can save just JSON stuff, dump it down.
Right.
So it's very convenient that way. But I'm doing exactly the same thing, but storing like JSON, you know, JavaScript object in memory. So there is, it's not harder or easier. It's like you don't have to actually do anything. So let's say I would like to every minute dump what I have in my array, which stays in memory. I can just stringify it and save it, or also just get the object and dump the object in the database, right? So it's very flexible that way. And also another thing that I started doing, if I do like a prototype of a website, I'm writing it without a database. I will like structure the object in those arrays until I get, you know, the structure that I like. And then I will just start making the database, and then I can just, you know, take this object, save it in the database. I'm done. So I'm just adding.
Yeah. And so this Node.js project you're working on, are you working on it by yourself?
Yeah, right now, yes.
Okay. Is this a labor of love, or are you looking to provide your income from it?
It's a little bit of both. It was like a project that I started to learn Node.js, and because I wasn't sold on it. And then when I realized this thing, you know, it's so awesome that have this statefulness that, of course, other languages, by the way, have them, right? And that's the point of my article, was also like to learn about them, because people tend to think about web development like in a very different way, that it's like still scripted and there is no state. And so I just learned like yesterday that Python can do the same thing, right? But when you ask developers that straight question, right? So I had this thing before I like, you know, I started doing the article and what have you. I wanted to make sure that I'm not crazy, right? So I talked with one developer that was like, had way more experience than me. And I said, okay, I need to store that data. How do I do it? His default answer was like, well, of course, a database, right? But yeah, but I would like to store it like in a faster way, and I don't care about that data. Well, then you can use Redis on one of those databases that store that live in RAM, right? So yeah, but I need a server, right? Can I do it differently? And so I had to force the answer from him. That finally he said, well, yeah, Node.js is stateful, so you can in theory like write in RAM. But that's obvious to me because I'm a Java developer. And I'm like, so why didn't you start with that answer first? You know what I mean?
So yeah, definitely.
When you ask developers, web developers, they will always start with a database, then Redis, and then maybe if they know, they will say RAM, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so by doing this article, by talking about this, it's like I'm trying to force the answer from people and see also what other languages have this feature that maybe people don't use because they think that, oh, it's useless. It's like a server. Why do I need that, right?
Yep. Are you ever intending on open sourcing this project, maybe later down the line?
I would prefer to write a full on, like, for example, blog example that is like would be fully functional, where you know, you can load the articles that will stay in memory. Of course, you will have the database, but every time you load the website, they will load all the content from the database, so you don't touch the database anymore. And to give like a practical example, how you can use this, because already a bunch of developers asked me, like, can you build something that will actually work that they can use, right? And, you know, expand. So I said, yeah, sure, fine. That's not a problem.
Well, I mean, let me rephrase it. Maybe that'll help you understand. Okay. So you've got this Node.js application called, and it implements what Simply is doing right now. Are you ever interested or considering open sourcing that so you can get a source community around it so that they can help you add features to it?
Possibly, if it doesn't work out, why not? But right now I would prefer to make something way smaller and it's less complicated, because like Well, right now, this thing is like have five different servers. Everything is connected to each other. So it's not something that you can, you know, jump in and add some features, right? I would way prefer like writing this example that is like easy to understand. And then people, if they want, they can add features like let's add tags, let's add images, let's add movies, let's add something else and see how this behaves and works.
Well, I think you're underestimating a potential audience here. There are a bunch of people who have written similar types of projects that might have influence or input that you might find valuable on as you're trying to develop this whole thing.
Okay.
So,
interesting. I mean, I never like consider it this way. But why not?
Okay.
I'm not joking. Sorry. I would think about this like seriously.
Yeah. Well, I can point you at 382 shows before this one that talk about how people are getting really successful by opening up their projects, even if they're big commercial projects, maybe having different levels of service offering or something, or you know, you get paid by providing the hosted version of it. Otherwise, they have to host it themselves. But the thing that seems to be consistent in these 385 previous guests is that they found that there's a value in open source that goes way beyond just I'm giving away free stuff. They actually get value back. They get to build a community around it, and they get contributions in ways that they might not even have considered. So, yeah, right. I'm just saying, go back and listen to some past shows, and you'll see how open source actually works.
I know your shows, but that was never like considered like this thing that I'm building to be that way. So because like the thing that I wanted to do now is like to write articles in a way that can actually like they're like more open, that there's not like I have a post blog and this thing will never change, right? So this is example again, like a developer read the article, said like, okay, interesting, let me think. Well, Python, it does the same thing, right? So if tomorrow, like a developer says like, well, Java does the same thing, I will give you the example and you know, and this thing can grow and actually collect more content and more knowledge. I hope that's the open source thing, right? Idea behind it. So that was like my thinking right now.
There's a lot. There's a much bigger world in open source than just being able to read an article about something you might have done or an extract of what you had done. So I would just encourage you to keep looking and keep learning about this. That's the end of my thread on that. I just wanted to make sure that I understand you. Yes. Okay. So I also want to get back. We're almost out of time, so I want to get over to the Internet of Things. What is that? Why are you attracted to that? And how does it affect people?
I think it's, there you go. For example, I'm more open to give out the schematics of like a project, a hardware project, than for software. It's for some weird reason. That's interesting. Why it's cool? Like, because I love hardware myself. I'm a hobbyist. I'm not like the greatest electronics engineer ever. But I like to measure stuff and learn from the environment what's happening around me. I also like to share and learn through those projects. Everything there was like always open sourced. Now I'm working on a third small project where you will be able to control a lamp. And of course, there will be an iOS app and the server because Pars.com, was closed, right? And so I want to actually build the whole server that will host all the devices that I'm going to build to collect the data in one place. So if you want to have your own copy, you will be able to actually take everything in, build it, and have your own like IoT house kind of a thing.
Wow, and so this would be using devices that are on the internet and able to respond to messages and conversations like over TCP/IP or Wi-Fi or something?
Yeah, that's why also like at first I started the learning about sockets, like you know how they actually work, and that's why the article went up. is just to build a foundation to not only give it for free and just use it and do whatever you want, but also so you can learn from it. So if you want to change something, you can do it. If you want to understand, okay, how this piece of hardware that I just built communicates with the Node.js server, you have an article that will explain this to you, right? And so maybe I'm doing like a different approach. I'm starting like first, let's share the knowledge and then let's build everything around it.
Cool.
Because for example, I don't like when I someone release a project open, right? And I have, and they will tell me like, well, the code is open. Just look at it and change whatever you want. But I have no understanding what this code does, right? So I want to first build a little bit of like foundation, so then it will be easier for anybody to understand what I give.
Okay, we're almost out of time. Is there anything else that we haven't covered yet that you'd like to cover?
No, I think I'm good.
Okay, well, it's been real interesting chatting with you. It's learning that your word community isn't what my word community was.
I'm sorry, guys. I'm really.
That's okay.
You said I will be funny. I don't know. I was funny, but I hope a little bit of funness.
Well, I was chuckling.
Was the show.
I was chuckling from time to time. So, yes, and I'm sure a bit of our audience was too. I do have two important questions I have to ask before we let you go, since you are technical. I wondered, how did you learn programming and when did you start?
Out of boredom. I was playing at work Counter-Strike because I was an IT administrator. So once I set up everything at work, I had nothing else to do after a year. So I started playing. Then I decided, well, I can do better with my life, right? So let's buy a book, because in those days you had books to learn from. And so I got a big, thick book about PHP, learned it there, and started doing small projects for the company. And then it went from there.
And are you a Windows or Linux guy?
Apple guy.
Oh, Apple. Oh, good. Oh, good. The best of the three. I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah, it's
now I'm going to get hate mail. Sorry, guys. I just mean that I use an Apple. I have an Apple iPhone, and I have this is being taped on an OS X box and all that sort of stuff. Since you're such a command line-ish, then what's your favorite text editor? VI or Emacs or something else?
Actually, Atom. How do you say it?
Atom. Okay.
Atom. Yeah. Sorry. Go. And it was written in Node.js, by the way.
Okay.
Yeah, and the beauty of it is, like, of course, open source, and yes, you can easily change anything you like about the products, which is very cool. Mm-hmm. And I like the mouse a lot, I must say. Okay. I like the command line, but the mouse is sometimes very useful.
Cool. And then also, what's your favorite scripting language?
Well, right now I'd say JavaScript.
Okay, that makes sense, given everything we talked about.
With Node. I was actually want to focus very a lot about with Node, so yeah.
Okay, well, since it's time to go, David, it's been real interesting having you on, and I wish you success with your projects in the future.
Thank you, guys.
Great. So that was David Getty talking about all sorts of interesting things. I dare ask this. Simon, what do you think?
Very brave, Randall, very brave. I've been thinking about the GitHub generation, you know, the millennial group that are coming into open source, and there is so much open source in the world of software now that people take it for granted, that people assume that open source means something like when you're done with it, letting people will play with it. Publishing your code on GitHub. And people, unfortunately, have not understood that open source means the use of the four freedoms, the freedom to use software for any purpose and to study it and to improve it and to share it with others. And they haven't understood that those four freedoms lead to collaboration, and that community means collaboration of people who are equals, people who are pioneering the jungle together, rather than people who want to live in the city that the pioneers built. And it's so sometimes it's very interesting to have a conversation with people who are in that place of understanding community to mean use, and understand open source to mean being delivered the finished work of someone else who is willing to share. So that was really my reflection on the show. How about you?
Yeah, well, I think there's a lot to say for that. I think in my conversation with David, some of this came out, which is that we have what we've been finding because of this great experiment for the last 20 years of being able to do commercial projects with open source software and make money in various ways based on that, that we no longer have to choose between we're all starving college kids and sharing our code and working together on things and studying each other's text. We don't have to choose between that and I'm going to build a proprietary project just so I can put it up on the web and have people come flock to me and pay me money. Because we have plenty of examples of things that are completely open source from top to bottom, and yet people have found ways to commercialize that. And I don't mean that in an ugly way, but you know, to be able to really, truly stand on the shoulders of others using their open stuff and creating our new layer on that, and it turning right around and making that as open source, so somebody else can, customize it, fix things for us, add new features, and the leverage you get from having developers sending you patches, you can't pay for that. Even if you had a commercial model, you'd have to hire those people and have them get spun up, and you have to provide desk space for them and things like that. But to get this to where I'm using my own laptop to help make a website that is open source, better by adding some maybe a translation or something. And I think this is the thing but we've seen this over and over again. I mean, you and I have talked to hundreds of companies that have really made this work, and I'm glad we have enough examples now where we don't. I think I said this a few shows ago, which is you don't have to. The question is no longer can we use open source. The question is now, how do we make sure that this gets shared well enough that we can build a community around it in the true open source sense of community? You know, do we put our code on GitHub? Do we put our issue tracker on GitHub just so it's all out in the open and people can really contribute to that? Do we spin off a foundation so that the governance is not just us? How do we make sure that multiple people outside our company are contributing to this? And we've had many, many successful examples of that. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, well, I think we have. One of the trends that I'm noticing in the free and open source community at the moment is realizing that we have to move beyond software freedom and move beyond licensing as mm-hmm. our metric for what we mean by open source. You know, people from your generation and my generation have been very focused on software freedom, on having the freedom to use the software for any purpose and making sure there's a license in place that guarantees that and staying mm-hmm. out of each other's way to make sure that works. And, well, that's a solved problem now. We've got all the open source licenses any civilization needs. We've got plenty of examples of open source projects that work. And so the discussions that I've been having this spring with people from the Free Software Foundation and from OSI have both revolved around this idea of going beyond licensing, beginning to say, well, how do we create authentic open source communities from scratch? You know, what is the way that you do that? What are the minimum standards that one has to require from something to call it an open source project or an open source community? Is there a template that we can use? So I think the interesting turning point I'm seeing happening is we do now need to start talking to people about how you do open source right and talk about it in terms that, well, come to where they are. Take it for read that there is a license in place that empowers you to do these things. Mm-hmm. Of course, you do actually have to make sure that's happened, which is the big discovery GitHub made, was they discovered they had to make sure everyone actually had an open source license so they had the freedom to tinker. But then we need to go beyond there and say, well, what does open source mean in terms of community, in terms of collaboration, in terms of indemnity, in terms of international relationships, in terms of the use of multiple languages and the impact on multiple cultures? And I think that's going to be the interesting thing to watch over the next few years in the world of open source as we come to grips with this need for systems of doing open source that mm-hmm. still leave us free to innovate, without necessarily reaching the place that so many open source projects have reached, of being in the control of corporations under things that are called foundations but are actually collaborations between corporations. And you know, that will be the interesting question for your guest next week, talking about Node.js.
Yes.
Node.js has gone to that place where it's in a foundation where all of the leaders of the foundation appear to me to be employees of corporations. And it's hard to see how individual developers actually get a look into what's going on there. So I think that's going to be the big problem. And I think our guest today has helped us to see that people just take it as read that open source exists. They feel hurt if you even ask questions about it. And yeah, we need to go beyond licensing and solve that problem, I think.
Good point. Good point. Your insight is always well appreciated. I mean, you have a wonderful crystal ball. I don't know how you keep doing that, but it's good. It's good. You must spend a lot more time thinking about it than I have time to. But that's all. It's good. And speaking of that, yes, we do have an update on Node.js coming in. Apparently quite a lot has happened since we had him on the show. I think about 2 years ago, 3 years ago. So we'll get more details. It'll be another geeky show. But actually, a lot of what we're going to talk about next week is sort of the whole controversy that Simon, you were just speaking about, so hopefully we'll get into some of that. And following that, we'll be at OSCON. Well, I'll be at OSCON, and I need to find a guest before Tuesday. That's going to be interesting. It means all day Monday I'll be running around trying to talk to people about what's happening at this year's conference. Following that, we have the best practices badge, which is so demonstrate on your website that you are actually following best practices. And if you check off everything that is on the list, you're following best practices. And then you can say that so other people can say, oh, how do I find out what the best practices are? And then follow that link. So they're setting that up for them. We also just added last week Varnish Cache, which is Varnish is used by a huge number of high performance websites. It basically is a reverse proxy layer. It does some analysis of the HTML and of the JS and compresses it on the fly, things like that. So I'm looking forward to having that on. I think my last three clients have used Varnish one way or the other. Still trying to fill Q2. If you go to twit.tv/floss, you can see our big spreadsheet. And if you don't see a project there that you really want to have on the show, the way to have that happen is to email the community coordinator or the main developer or something and say, hey, I listen to Floss Weekly every week, and you should be on that show. And you let them email me, merlin@stoneedge.com. That's about 90% of the shows in the last, 7 years have gotten produced. Wow, 7 years, 8 years. We're actually coming up on 10 years, coming up in a few weeks. So long time on this show. Okay, and then, again, always looking for new guests. I still have a few slots left for Q2, and I'll open Q3 up just as soon as that is mostly full. We have a live stream. We took a couple questions from there at live.twit.tv. We're taping all the time at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time on Tuesdays. You can follow us on Floss Weekly on Google Plus. You can also listen to at Floss Weekly on Twitter, and because it's automatically tweeted over to there. You can follow me at Merlyn, M-E-R-L-Y-N, on Twitter as well. But I don't typically source things there. Most of my source material comes from Google Plus, Randall L. Schwartz. So like I said a moment ago, I'm going to be at OSCON wandering the hall. If you see me, please come up and say, I enjoy Floss Weekly. Or if you still remember what they are, you can come up and say, thank you for your Perl books. Okay? All the geezers are going to come up now. Hey, I'm still using your Perl books. They were great. And I'm going to be at YAPC NA a few weeks after that. That's yet another Perl conference. It's going to be an... It's going to be Orlando in July. That's not going to be good. Anyway, and I said a couple of weeks ago, for the last few weeks, I was going to FISLE in Porto Alegre, but I have decided that the Zika virus is something I do not want to be a vector for. So I'm skipping the conference this year. I just don't. I travel so much that, you know, if I became a carrier for it, I would infect a wide swath of people. So I don't want to make sure that I am not that guy. Okay. I will be at DragonCon in September in Hotlanta, also a great time to be in Atlanta. And I'll be on the, what is it called? The EFF track and possibly the podcasting track if they actually accept my request. But definitely I'm going to be on three or four things on the EFF track. Simon, anything for you to plug today?
Not really. I'm just about to go and do some client work in San Francisco. If you're in the city or in the Bay Area, I would love to see you and share a beverage. Do get in touch. You can find me through my website, webmink.com, and there's a contact form on the About page. You'll find me on Twitter, where I'm Webmink. If there's one thing I'd really like everybody to do, it is to go renew or take out a subscription to Linux Voice magazine. They're just at that critical stage where they need everybody to renew to get them over the hump and keep them in business for another few years. So if there's one thing you wanted to do today that for the world of free and open source software and Linux, it is go renew or take out a subscription to Linux Voice magazine. They would really appreciate it. It's a true community-run, community-friendly publication, and they deserve your help. So that's my plug for today, Randall.
I don't know if you've ever explained in this show the origin of WebMink.
It is an old, there was a Dilbert cartoon once that talked about how they needed a marketing weasel to help them with the way that they explain things. And in the cartoon, the weasel leans over and says, I think you meant mink. And it's a reference back to that very elderly Dilbert cartoon from the mid-1990s. And there's still a link to it on my website somewhere. It's one of those names that probably isn't very relevant anymore, but you've got it, and so, you know, you've got to keep it. You were very wise to take Merlin when you could, I think.
Yes. I wish I would have gotten Merlin.com, though. That would have been really cool. I do have RandallLSchwartz.info, though. And Randall L. I have it spelled both ways because I know people get it wrong. So, well, you can look at the one, the two L's being Randall spelled wrong and then Schwartz, or you can look at it as my professional title, which is Randall L. Schwartz. So right. I took both of them just in case.
I have a tranche of exciting domain names that I don't do very much useful with, really.
Yes.
But the one I'm proudest of is I own softwarefreedom.net. Which is where I keep my essays, and I'm hanging on to it because it's going to come in. It'll be important for something important one day, so I'm hanging on to it and keeping it just in case that important thing comes along.
Well, speaking of domain names, you couldn't get the .pl domain outside of Poland for many years, and the one contribution I made to the Perl distribution, actually in the distribution, is called chat2.pl, and I even wrote the registrar and I said, "Can I get chat2.pl?" and they said, they wrote back something about, like, you're not in Poland, so I can't do that. When I was recently on Hover, just bouncing around, I found out that they're registering PL domains. And so I typed chat2.pl, and what do you know? It was available. So I now own chat2.pl, the one piece of software that I ever contributed to the Perl core, except it's now removed. But if you go to chat2.pl, it'll run out to your browser right now, it will take you to the Git page of the actual first version of chat2.pl as it existed in the Perl distribution. So my one weird thing for the month was signing up for chat2.pl. Anyway, okay, we're rambling on. But no, you said something earlier. You're going to do clown work in San Francisco?
Client work.
Oh, client!
You know those people who pay the bills? Those people. Yeah.
I was thinking you said clown. I was trying to figure out, are you going to put on the face?
I'm afraid of clowns. I don't do that.
All right. Well, we better wrap it up. We'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.